All right, so today we're going to dive into something really, really foundational to how our courts work, and that is just how final is a guilty plea?
Yeah.
Like when you say those words, "I'm guilty," in a courtroom, what does that actually mean in terms of like, can you take it back?
Right.
We've got a pretty interesting case here to help us unpack all this. It comes from the Ninth Circuit.
Oh, okay.
It's called United States v. Ensminger. And the big question we're wrestling with is this. Let's say someone pleads guilty to breaking a law, right?
Right.
But then, later on, a court somewhere else in the country, in a totally separate case, raises doubts about whether that law is even constitutional. So, like, does that give the person who already pled guilty a chance to say, wait a minute, hold on, I want to take that back? Like, what happens then? To really break this down, we're going to walk through the specifics of the Ensminger case, the legal rule at the heart of this, how the court thought about all of this, and what it tells us about just how much weight a guilty plea actually carries in this system.
Okay, sounds good.
So to kick things off, let's pull in our expert who can help us untangle this. Welcome to the deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So when we're talking about a guilty plea, we're really talking about the bedrock of our legal system, right?
Absolutely. It goes to the core of how our justice system operates. I mean, when you think about it, a guilty plea is an admission of wrongdoing. It's basically saying to the court, I did it.
Right.
And the system, it takes that admission very, very seriously. And what the Ensminger case does is it really shines a light on this really interesting question. What happens when someone has second thoughts about their guilty plea? Not because of something that happened in their own case, but because of something that happened in a totally different case somewhere else in the country.
Yep.
And it's a big deal because our legal system, it's not just one big monolith, right? We
Nice.
have federal courts, state courts, different circuits. So how do we reconcile those different pieces when they might seem to be, going in different directions?
Yeah, it gets complicated fast. So let's ground ourselves in the specifics of this case, this Ensminger case. What actually happened here?
Okay, so we have Terry Ensminger.
Right.
He pled guilty in Montana, which is in the Ninth Circuit, to failing to register as a sex offender under SORNA.
SORNA, that's the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, right?
Exactly.
So basically, he was required to register, and he didn't. Pretty straightforward so far.
Yep, seems pretty simple.
But I'm guessing there's a twist.
Oh, there is definitely a twist here. After Mr. Ensminger entered that guilty plea, but before he was actually sentenced, there was this other case in a district court in Florida. It was called United States v. Powers. And in Powers, the court basically said, we're not so sure if these enforcement parts of SORNA are actually constitutional. Yeah, specifically, they were looking at whether it was okay under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution.
Okay, and the Commerce Clause, that's the part of the Constitution that gives Congress the power to regulate, interstate commerce.
Right, exactly.
And the Florida court was saying maybe using that clause to make people register as sex offenders isn't kosher.
Yeah, that was their question.
Okay, so we've got this guy in Montana who admitted to violating SORNA, and then bam, a court in Florida throws a wrench in things by questioning if SORNA is even constitutional in the first place.
Yep, that's the setup. But there's another really important piece here, and this is where the structure of our court system comes into play. So you have to understand that a district court in Florida is on the same level, basically, as the district court in Montana where Ensminger was charged. And the thing about district court decisions is that they're only binding within their own specific district.
Ah, okay. So what the court in Florida said about SORNA might be interesting to folks in Montana, but it wasn't automatically the law of the land in Montana.
Exactly. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is above the district court in Montana, has its own set of precedents, its own rules that they follow. So just because a district court in Florida raised a question about SORNA, that didn't mean the Ninth Circuit, which covers Montana, had to suddenly change its mind.
Makes sense. All right, so then how did Ensminger try to use this Florida case, this Powers decision, to his advantage?
Well, he basically saw it as an opening. He went back to the Montana court and said, hey, this whole thing about SORNA maybe being unconstitutional, that's a fair and just reason for me to take back my guilty plea.
Like, I might not have actually broken the law after all, so let me out of this.
Right. That was essentially his argument. He was saying this new development, this Powers decision, throws the whole basis of his plea into question. But here's the thing, you have to remember two really crucial points here. First, as we just talked about, the Powers decision didn't have any binding legal authority on the courts in the Ninth Circuit.
Right.
They weren't obligated to follow what a court in Florida decided.
They could just say thanks, but no thanks.
Exactly.
Okay, what's the second point?
The second point, and this is huge, the Ninth Circuit had already looked at the constitutionality of SORNA in previous cases and had said it was constitutional. So as far as the Ninth Circuit was concerned, the law was settled.
Got it. So Ensminger was basically trying to use this out-of-circuit, non-binding decision from Florida to overturn both his own plea and the already established law in his own jurisdiction.
Yep, that was his play. And the district court in Montana, they weren't buying it. They said, no, you can't withdraw your plea just because of this Florida case.
Which makes sense, given what we just talked about.
Right. And that's what led to the appeal up to the Ninth Circuit.
Okay, so now we're at the heart of this deep dive. What's the specific legal rule that determines whether someone can back out of a guilty plea? Like, what are the courts looking at?
So the key rule here is Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 11DB. And what this rule says is that a defendant, someone who's been charged with a crime, can withdraw their guilty plea before sentencing if they have what the rule calls a fair and just reason.
Fair and just reason. It seems kind of vague. Like, what does that really mean in practice?
Well, that's the thing. It's actually not as broad as it might sound. Courts tend to interpret that phrase, fair and just reason, pretty narrowly.
It's not just a buyer's remorse kind of thing.
No, definitely not. It's not like, oh, I changed my mind. I don't want to plead guilty anymore. There has to be a legitimate issue that calls into question whether the original plea was valid, whether it was voluntary.
So some kind of problem with the plea itself, not just a change of heart.
Yeah, it has to be something more than that.
And in Ensminger's case, he was saying, this Powers decision, this doubt it raised about SORNA, that was his fair and just reason.
Right. That was his argument. He was trying to fit that into this very specific legal box.
Okay. So we've got the legal standard, this fair and just reason rule. But then there's another layer to this, right? How does the Ninth Circuit actually go about reviewing the district court's decision?
That's a really important point, and it gets to the way appeals work. So when an appellate court like the Ninth Circuit looks at a lower court's decision, they don't just start from scratch. They use what's called a standard of review. And in this kind of case, the standard is abuse of discretion.
Okay. Abuse of discretion. There's some more legal jargon. What does that actually mean?
Basically, it means the Ninth Circuit wasn't looking at whether they, the appellate judges, would have done the same thing as the district court. It's not about whether they agree or disagree. Instead, they're looking at whether the district court's decision was so off base, so unreasonable, that it basically went beyond the bounds of what's acceptable.
So, like, did the district court make a really bad call? Not just a different call than what the Ninth Circuit judges might have made?
Exactly. They're looking for something more than just a difference of opinion. It's about whether there was a clear error in judgment, a misapplication of the law, or if they got the facts wrong.
Got it. So it's more like checking for a serious mistake, not just second-guessing the lower court.
Right. That's the idea.
All right. So with all of that in mind, with the fair and just reason standard and this abuse of discretion review, What did the Ninth Circuit ultimately decide in Ensminger's case?
Well, they sided with the district court. They said, nope, Mr. Ensminger, you can't withdraw your guilty plea just because of that Florida case. And their reasoning boiled down to a couple of key points.
Okay. What's here?
The first one, and probably the most obvious, is what we already talked about. That Powers decision from Florida, it had zero binding legal authority in the Ninth Circuit.
Right. That was a big deal.
The Ninth Circuit had their own precedent, their own rules, and those precedents said that SORNA was constitutional under the Commerce Clause.
So a district court in Florida wasn't going to change that?
Nope, not at all. The Ninth Circuit was basically saying the legal landscape in their jurisdiction hadn't changed, that Florida decision was an outlier.
It didn't create some new rule that everyone had to follow.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. What was the other main point?
The other really interesting point the court brought up was about Ensminger's own strategic decisions. Remember, he pled guilty before this Powers decision even came out.
Right. So what about that?
Well, the court pointed out that he could have challenged the constitutionality of SORNA himself right there in Montana before he ever decided to plead guilty.
Like, he could have said, I think this law is unconstitutional, and tried to fight it.
Exactly. That argument was available to him.
So why didn't he?
Well, we can't know for sure. Maybe he thought he wouldn't win that argument, or maybe he had other reasons for pleading guilty.
Right. But the point is, He had the option.
He did. And the Ninth Circuit was basically saying that you can't use a guilty plea as a kind of test run. It's not like you can say, I'll plead guilty, but if I find a court decision later on that I like better, I'll just change my mind.
You're committed.
Yeah, you're making a serious commitment. And what this really highlights, I think, is the importance of thinking through all your options, exploring all the legal arguments before you decide to plead guilty.
Right, because once you say those words, I'm guilty, it's not so easy to undo.
Definitely not.
It's a big deal.
Huge.
Okay, so the Ninth Circuit was basically saying, look, you had your chance to fight the law, you chose not to, so you're stuck with your guilty plea.
Well, they said it in a more formal legal way, but yeah, that's the gist of it.
And they even used some pretty strong language to emphasize the importance of finality in the justice system. They called a guilty plea a grave and solemn act. So it's not just some casual thing you can easily undo. I could see why they'd want to emphasize that. If courts were constantly letting people withdraw pleas based on non-binding decisions from other parts of the country, it would be chaos.
No, absolutely. The system would grind to a halt. Everyone would be constantly trying to find some case somewhere that might help them get out of their plea.
Right. So there has to be some stability, some finality.
Definitely.
Okay. So even if Ensminger really did change his mind based on this Florida decision, that wasn't enough to legally justify withdrawing his plea. Nope. Not even close. The Ninth Circuit made it crystal clear that a change of heart, even if it's based on a new court decision, just doesn't cut it. The standard is much higher than that.
It has to be a fair and just reason. And that means something that directly affects the validity of your own plea in your own jurisdiction.
Exactly. And they also said that the district court didn't need to hold a separate hearing to look at all this. They said the existing record, everything that had already been presented, was enough to decide the case.
All right. So for our listeners, for anyone who's trying to understand just how much weight a guilty plea carries, what are the big takeaways from this Ensminger case? What do we need to remember?
Okay, so first of all, that fair and just reason standard. It's a big deal. It's a tough standard to meet. It's not easy to withdraw a guilty plea. Second, if there's a court decision somewhere else in the country, in a different jurisdiction, and it doesn't set a binding precedent in your circuit, it's very unlikely that's going to be a good enough reason to withdraw your plea.
Right. It has to be something that directly affects the law in your jurisdiction. And third, those choices you make before you plead guilty, they matter. If there was a legal argument you could have made, like about the constitutionality of the law, and you chose not to, you can't just come back later and try to use a decision from somewhere else to undo your plea. You had your chance.
It's about those strategic decisions you make early on.
Yeah, and it's important to understand how those decisions can impact you down the road.
So we've talked about the Ensminger case, and it was about SORNA, the sex offender registry law.
Yeah.
But is this whole idea, this principle about the finality of a plea and the high bar for withdrawing it, does that apply to other types of pleas too?
Absolutely. This case is really a great example of a broader principle that applies across all kinds of criminal cases. A guilty plea is a serious commitment, and the courts are very careful about letting people back out of that commitment without a very strong, legally valid reason.
So it's not just specific to sex offender cases?
No, it's a fundamental principle of our criminal justice system.
Got it. And for our listeners, especially those who might be in law school or just really interested in how the law works, this case shows just how final a guilty plea really is. It's not something you can just lightly decide to do and then easily change your mind later on.
Right, exactly.
All right, so as we wrap up this deep dive into United States v. Ensminger, the bottom line is this. A decision from a Florida court that didn't even create binding precedent in the Ninth Circuit wasn't a good enough reason for Mr. Ensminger to withdraw his plea. The court really emphasized how narrow that fair and just reason standard is, and how much deference they give to the district court's original decision. And they made it clear that a guilty plea is a big deal. It's not something you can just undo because you have second thoughts, or because a court somewhere else in the country says something interesting about the law you pled guilty to breaking.
Yeah, that's a great summary.
And I think what makes this case so interesting is that it highlights a kind of tension in the law. On one hand, you have this desire for accuracy, for making sure we're getting things right. And maybe that Florida court did have a valid point about the constitutionality of SORNA.
Right.
But on the other hand, you have the need for finality in the system, for things to come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things, accuracy and finality, they don't always perfectly align.
No, they don't. And this case is a great example of that.
So as we leave our listeners to ponder this, what are the bigger implications here? What happens when these two principles, accuracy and finality, bump up against each other?
Yeah, it's a really tough question. I mean, on the one hand, you want to make sure that people aren't being punished for violating laws that might not even be constitutional.
Right.
But on the other hand, you need some kind of closure in the system. You can't have cases dragging on forever just because there's some new legal development somewhere else. So how do we balance those competing interests? How do we make sure that the system is fair, but also efficient?
Yeah, those are some really tough questions. And I think this case, it gives us a lot to think about in terms of how our legal system works, how we balance these different values, and ultimately what it means to say, I'm guilty.
Definitely. It's a reminder that the law is not always black and white. There are a lot of gray areas, and sometimes those gray areas raise some really profound questions about how justice should be served.
Food for thought, as always.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, this was a good one.
I always learn something new when we do these. And for our listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.